Yo, welcome back to Turn to Play Podcast. I'm your host, Grande Steve. We're off a week for computer issues, computer not working, but we're back. We're in the saddle again, and we've got a loaded show for you with a new segment, and our draw of the week returns, and we've got our classic greasy gambling picks, which I'm in desperate need of a turnaround. It's on, like my pal Big Cat says, I'd rather be 0-6 than 3-3, because that's actually harder to do. So if you would fade me, you'd be 6-0 right now. So really, like, my picks are actually gold. You just stick with the trend here. We'll see if I can turn it around, though. Maybe. I would keep fade me, though. And part of that reason is, one, the sharps aren't as sharp anymore, especially in the first 4 weeks of the season. The sharp money I shouldn't value so much, and the market I shouldn't value so much in the first 4 weeks of the season as much, because there's so much more volatility, unknowns, and the players, which is our main topic here, the preseason almost doesn't exist anymore. These teams, you can pencil them in for a shitty opening couple weeks who don't play their starters at all in the preseason, which is just wild to me that you completely, there's some teams that didn't play other than their offensive line, like any starters at all. And that's malpractice to me, coaching and GMing malpractice. But nonetheless, that's what's causing these injuries too, to start the season here. So many injuries on both sides of the ball, especially these bigger fellas that aren't as maybe game conditioned and don't have as many stadium reps. I get the joint practices now are kind of replacing that, but that is still just do your rep and get back to the line of scrimmage, or you know the finite end. You got 10 plays and then you're done. So you know how to manage your energy and stuff differently at those practices. And it's not the same as a game where there's a lot more unknowns. Missed the field goal, son of a bitch. I had over 3.5 field goals. Thursday night football. Anyway, And now Roger Goodell, you know, they're using this as a bargaining chip. They want to get rid of another preseason game to go down to just two preseason games and add a 19th regular season game. And that's just going to keep trending in the wrong direction for the league, especially this first month of the league. It's not as good of a product. None of these games are a great product. I have not been thoroughly entertained my expectations on Sunday these first 2 weeks, and there's been some good primetime games and stuff, and then a couple good games mixed in, but overall the product has not been as good, and it takes these teams a month, like a month of preseason, to get their shit together. So this is just bad. It's everything about it is bad. I would like to maybe do a study of injuries in the first 4 weeks of the season, with these past 3 to 5 years versus the decade before that, where they were playing guys in the preseason. So, Danny, what I know you had something to add to it as well, but I just completely disagree, and I don't think enough people are talking about this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree for sure with the preseason thing. I don't think you have to play a whole lot. Like,
every game.
You know, real mad at Tomlin for leaving starters in way too long. But especially defensively, I think it's a little different. But offensively, like, you have to at least play a little bit and kind of get that rhythm and cohesiveness. Especially so many things are, you know, just kind of timing based. And so, but I also think part of it, you know, you see the stats getting floated around on Twitter of just the passing numbers overall being like way down. And part of that, I think, is just the era that we, you know, grew up in and were accustomed to, especially as like the rules were changing to heavily favor offense and the passing game. Like we grew up with like gods amongst mortals at the quarterback position. You know, if you look at like the top 15 or so quarterbacks of all time, 8 of them just happened to like coincide in the 2000s to 2010s. And you know, those guys are all retired and moved on now, or, you know, Aaron Rodgers on his very last leg, literally and figuratively type of thing. So, I was just kind of talking to some dudes today about it, even like Patrick Mahomes, obviously just generational. He's the clear cut number one right now. And then you have like Josh Allen solidified in that 2 spot. Then after that, I mean, there's just like a massive drop off in quarterback play. Like, so who, you know, for a while there was like great, like when you would look at like top fives, oftentimes guys like Breeze or like Roethlisberger or, you know, just these generational greats were like being left out of that. And now you have like who, what is there next, right? Like Lamar is great, but he's a great athlete. He's not a great quarterback. He's never thrown for 4,000, may never ever throw for 4,000, right? You know, so he's different. He's not going to hurt you with his passing numbers. And then, you know, it's like, what's that next tier? Maybe Stroud, maybe Burrow. Burrow hasn't shown it consistently. You know, even like a guy like Burrow, as great as he is in some flashes, he's not even really in a Eli Manning or Phillip Rivers tier yet, like statistically, or, you know, just, you know, if you had a Rivers, Eli, and Joe Burrow all at 26 years old in their prime, I would guess almost every GM, if not most, if not all, would take either Eli or Phillip Rivers probably prior to Joe Burrow at this point. You know what I mean? So it's like, and Joe Burrow is probably the number 3 quarterback in the league right now. So that's just kind of how the quarterback play has fallen off too. You know, a lot of big name guys coming out of college haven't necessarily panned out. You know, Trevor Lawrence was looked at as like a lock, the greatest prospect ever, and he's been good, but hasn't really taken that next step, you know. So like, who are your next tier guys after Burrow? You know, Kirk, Baker, Tua, Dak. Like, these are okay quarterbacks, but they're not, they're fringe top 5 guys right now, and they're not even close to like the, you know, the talent. They're not elite guys like we are used to, you know, with the Bradys, the Mannings, the Roethlisbergers, and just the era we came through was just loaded with quarterbacks. So that's definitely part of it too. I think we're just spoiled.
Yeah, I think the last generation is better than the current generation, especially when you look at, well, you know, Mr. Tua sliding right into a forgot all of his training on how to fall and how to take hits and when not to hit. And you know, people were defending him. Oh, he's just playing hard, and that's how he's taught to play. Well, no, he actually spent a whole summer talking about how he was trying to not play exactly like that. And then on top of it, you're down what? They're down 24 points at that drive to go down 17, I think. If he gets in the end zone there, like, it was already basically garbage time. So, you know, not smart football play there. And then you do see a lot more rushing from the quarterbacks nowadays to extend the play, and that's obviously a contributing factor to quarterback injury.
That's something too. We are how we were in like a quarterback era. Right now, it feels like we're in a elite pass rusher era. You know what I mean? Like, we have all these generational pass rusher guys right now. So that's part of it too.
Yeah, we're just every franchise that doesn't have Patrick Mahomes is just kind of in looking for their guy. Not to like, even Lamar, who we've said year after year, kind of stinks. He's overrated passer. He's an excellent runner and an excellent play extender. But as far as pocket passing, he is mid-tier at best. And he doesn't have great weapons either. But nonetheless, he is not Patrick Mahomes whatsoever, and it showed in the AFC Championship game last year. But so if you take away the potential of Lamar, maybe, like, I don't even, and then you say Burrow's been banged up all the time. Two is banged up all the time. Trevor Lawrence isn't panning out to be a hero quarterback. Justin Herbert is not a hero quarterback. So all these guys that are we are putting in the top echelon of quarterbacks these past couple years and into this year, they are not, just because they're better than 80% of the league doesn't make them great quarterbacks. I don't think any of them besides Mahomes is a great quarterback. So, you know, there's that. But well, that's a good bookmark to put that in. But yeah, I am totally against axing another preseason game. And I think, and then this league is a copycat league. It's a cyclical league. And I think if it keeps trending in this direction and some of these guys smart, these coaching staffs and front offices smarten up to see the teams that are playing their starters in preseason for at least, you know, 25%, I guess it would be a good number of the snaps of preseason games, meaning about the first quarter of each game, maybe into the second quarter of one of those games, which is kind of all it used to be. Those teams are starting 1-1, 2-0, and having a much more efficient team. And most importantly, they start to build their identity in the preseason, which is the most crucial part of a football team, you know, improving over the season to get to where you want to be playing football in December, to get into the playoffs and make a run. So, you know, it's like a head start. It's getting a head start by playing in the preseason. And it's as simple as that.
So, but give me – I do – while we're on the Tua topic, I want to pick your brain for – just give me a 30-second to a minute blurb. So, from my standpoint, I mean, obviously, Tua gets a lot of, like – generates a lot of, you know, buzz on the subject because his concussions are so, like – very symptomatic, right? And obviously it draws a lot of attention to it. The symptoms don't necessarily always correlate to severity of the concussion, and it is important to point out, you know, recovery time between concussions is, you know, very crucial. And it was 21 months, almost 21 full months between his last crazy concussion to this one. So there's a lot of calls for Tua to like retire and things like that. But when you, I mean, which obviously nobody wants three concussions, especially in a 2-year span, but there are plenty of players who have three or more, many more that are still playing and not being pushed to retire, you know, by the Twitter fingers. So I guess give me, what are your thoughts on Tua and his, I mean, you've probably worked a lot more directly actually with concussions than me.
Yeah. And then my slight background with neuro classes in OT school and stuff to give more background. Yeah, it's not necessarily the number of times you've had a concussion. It is the length of your symptoms, how long those symptoms last. So if he had, and then I always circle back to fucking Mason Rudolph. That guy still had symptoms when we threw his ass back on the field. And it was pretty evident to me that he still had symptoms when we cleared him 2 weeks after that. Maybe it was like 17 days he got back. But, you know, so if Tua's going to take at least 2 weeks here, I think, off to
Oh yeah, they put him on the IR, so he's out for
four. Oh, okay. That's right. So he's got a month to, and so okay, if he clear, even if it takes him an entire month to clear up from these symptoms, that's a long time to have to for your brain to tell you it's back to its baseline. And when your brain takes 4 months, I know an 85 year, well, technically the average age is in the low 70s for men. So 75 years, I understand 4 months is not, or 4 weeks is nothing, 1 month. But if you add that with probably the last time it took him several weeks to get over those symptoms, then you're looking at a long time of your brain being not healthy. And you think about an alcoholic or something. If you damage your liver, or you got hit in the kidneys, or something, had an acute kidney injury, you're like concerned about your kidney or your liver, right? You're like, I gotta, maybe not the alcoholic, but I guess this is the same. He's addicted to football. He feels the obligation to have to keep playing football. And it's in him. He has a deep desire. It's not an addiction, but he has a deep-seated desire to continue to play football at the highest level. It's such an honor and a prestige and blah, blah, blah. So he has pressure on him internally, and I'm sure externally, whether they admit it or not, to continue playing football for his contract, which just started. And so, we're not taking the brain which is the most important organ in the body. We're not taking the brain as seriously as maybe we're taking a kidney injury or a liver injury or another organ in the body. And so even if you tear your knee, three times, your knee is done. Like, you're like, yeah, this guy can't go on his knee. Well, the brain's a lot more resilient than the knee and the kidney and even the liver, maybe not the liver, but the brain's much more resilient, and we have billions of brain cells. So, like, it's not going to show up in 2024 or 5 for Tua, but eventually all those scrambled brain cells and deoxygenated, so to speak, brain cells, it's really a lack of neurotransmitter. When you age and you naturally lose more of your brain's white matter, then it's going to catch up to you tenfold. And that's what the CTE basically is. I know I've been going on for 4 minutes here, but it all is important, and it all proves to the fact that no Tua should not be continuing to play football, because this is basically the equivalent, I'd say, to a drinker having a small little hiccup on their liver, or like, hey, you got some spots on your liver, buddy, you better slow down. Is the alcoholic going to slow down? Or if he keeps drinking, he's definitely going to be on the fast lane to cirrhosis. So, yeah, two is on the fast. That's the best way I can put it. He's on the fast lane for CTE. The way he plays, he obviously is still going to put his body on the line if he's out there, which you kind of have to do. He didn't have to in that play. That was a bad play. He was not forced into being hit like that. He basically did the hitting with his head down. If he would have kept his head up, which they teach, if he would have kept his face mask up, he would have saw where prayers for DeMar. He would have saw where DeMar's body was, and his body naturally would have at least protected his head, instinctively protected his head a little bit more, and maybe gotten hit in the shoulder and got a stinger or an AC sprain. But he wouldn't have had that straight neck crown of the helmet, which we always talk about, crown of the helmet impact, which is definitely what caused that decorticate response of the flexed fingers and all that. And he pointed like he was getting the first down, pointed in the wrong direction. So he did know he got the first down. He didn't get amnesia or short-term memory loss there. So it wasn't that severe of a concussion, but it still scrambled his sensory motor function. And then, it's a mess. It's a mess. So the league, I don't think the league wants him to play anymore. Because, man, you take another shot to the crown of the helmet like that, or he gets slammed down and hits the back of his head again. Maybe it will result in immediate symptoms that last permanently. And I'll leave it at that.
So we stretched that much longer than 30 to 60 seconds in typical. So let me summarize it. So you are saying more so just concussions in general, like a guy like Denzel Ward, who's on his fifth, like you would say you were pretty much in saying the same thing as with Tua, even though Tua's appear more symptomatic to the, you
know, I'm saying that it's each individual, it's an individual case by case study of what happened. And it's, I think the key variable to look at here is the length of the symptoms. If your symptoms go away the next day, I've gotten probably, I'm imagining 8-ish concussions at least, from mostly from, well, who knows how many I've actually had in football, and I go home with a pounding headache after the game, and because in offensive line you're banging helmets every play, so you go home and you just take some Tylenol and show up next day for film. But those all went away. Saturday I felt fine. So those all went away, and I remember hitting my I got a concussion skiing, the first and only time I've skied. My head pounded off the icy snow, 1000% a concussion. I knew it, and that took me 2 or 3 days to feel right again. Not as good. I hit my head off the crossbar of the pull up bar, the weight rack. I smacked my head off of that once doing band stuff. And I was fine. I had a headache the rest of the day, and I was fine. I would say a day, 30 hours later, day and a half later, like not bad. But when you got hit like that so hard in an NFL game, and you've got the headache and the sensitivity to light, and I've seen it just in high school and college football, kids where that shit lasts 10 days. 14 days. And if they're being honest with me, some, you know, a couple of them have been, you know, saying, yeah, no, I still have a headache. I still, the looking directly into the light bothers me. When it's that is a different story. And when you multiply those on top of each other, that's when you're doing serious permanent brain damage. And again, we have so many brain cells that you're still going to appear healthy, and you can appear healthy to the independent neurologist and answer all that independent neurologist is going to do is basically give him a short and long-term memory test, check his motor reflexes, check his eyes to the light, check this and that. And then the rest of that is subjective of how are you feeling and does this bother you? And he can easily say no, that light doesn't bother my eyes. So no one knows except for the player how bad it is and how long these symptoms are lasting. We'll never know, have any accurate data on that, especially at the NFL level when there's millions on the line for this guy's generational wealth. And so that's the whole point. It's not the number of concussions you've been diagnosed with. It's the length of the symptoms you had and how many symptoms lasted that long.
Right. As far as Tua, you know, we don't know. Like, he could have been, that was the Thursday night game. He could have been symptom-free Friday, I guess is what I'm saying. We don't know.
Could have been.
He could be still very symptomatic today. Right. So I think we kind of bounced all over the place, but yes,
I think it just depends.
Though the posturing, and you know, he's had crazy appearing concussions, kind of like Steve is saying, if that doesn't necessarily mean they are like more severe or long term. If he, you know,
I will say the posturing,
he was healthy all last season. I mean, you see fighters get knocked out in posture all the time, and they. You know, it's,
yeah, and how many of them are thriving in their 60s?
No, that's correct. Yeah. I'm just saying there are many players.
Yeah,
and Tua's boat who don't get the attention that Tua gets, I guess.
Yeah, but the fighter gets to pick when he fights next. The fighter can take three.
I think if you get knocked out, you can't. They can't even train for like months. Like, isn't there? There's a rule that, right?
It's not. Yeah, it's you definitely can't fight for. I think 90 days. Every combat sport is different, but I think at least UFC, it's 90 days. Boxing's probably longer, even. But yeah, so the fight, yeah. So to add on that is the posturing though. The posturing does mean you were rocked to your brainstem. When you have the posturing, that means your brainstem was affected, and that's the HQ, if you will, of your motor output. And that means when things get stiff like that, that means your brain shut off the brain stem, and there's nothing going to your muscles at the moment to tell them what to do and how to move or to relax. And so everything just goes into a guarding defensive position. So he's been rocked to his brain stem at least twice on television, which is bad. So that is the one acute thing we can look at. If you've had that does make it a bit worse. We don't know how worse yet, really, with research, but I can't imagine having your brainstem shut off twice in even 3 years can be great for your long-term health or a good sign for you to keep doing that thing that makes your brainstem shut off every year or two, for Tua specifically.
All right. Well, there's your 30 to 60 second concussion discussion. Hope it was
productive, viewers. 12 minutes. 12 minute segment. Okay. I think it was worth it. I think it was informational.
It was informational. We'll get on to what we got next.
Well, here, we got our new segment: squad up or sit down. And squad up, obviously. There's gonna be two options: two players or two items, two thoughts. Anything you can think of, please submit us your squad up, sit down recommendations of fantasy players or random topics that you'd like us to add to the list here. But we each pick one of the two things to squad up with, and the other one's got to sit down. So this is all the football player talk we do is in the context of this NFL week. And if you want to, and we're going to try to make this quick. you only get one thought per thing, who you're squadding up with and sitting down with. You only get one thought, one line. And so if there's more context needed to the player, but this is basically who you would want on your fantasy team or DFS roster this week, and who you want to leave on your bench or cut even. So obviously if we'll get into it, we'll explain it as we go here this first week, and we'll keep it a little less here, lighter. So makes sense to you?
I'm ready. I'm rolling.
All right.
Rolling with it.
So this is, we'll start out in fantasy land here. Gus Edwards, JK Dobbins, who you squadding up with?
I'm squadding up with JK the whole way. It's been that he's been the better running back their whole career. Neither can stay healthy, so that's
a wash. Wash, yes.
It's JK by a lot. Sit down, Gus.
Yeah, I'm going to sit down, Gus. The Gus bus got to park its yellow Heine, yellow and blue powdered Heine, and it's the JK show until he inevitably gets hurt, whether short-term or long-term. And then it'll be the Gus bus can turn the keys and get moving. But for now, it's JK squad up. Seafood
arc, though.
Yes, it would be incredible if he could continue this. It would be incredible, especially it would kind of disprove the aging running back thing. But Old Bay versus lemon pepper on your seafood.
By no means am I a food connoisseur here. I grew up eating Hot Pockets and Pop Tarts and
autism food.
But I'm gonna go lemon pepper here. Lemon seafood is a, you know, I don't know. It's a combo that works.
Old Bay hot sauce is the goat of seafood hot sauces. I fucking love Old Bay hot sauce. And but I'm gonna go lemon pepper as well. I like that over the Old Bay by a small margin. But yeah, give me lemon pepper seasoning. But that Old Bay hot sauce is 1A for seafood. All right, two injured quarterbacks here. Jordan Love might play. Doubt it, but he might. And then Justin Herbert has an ankle sprain. He did not practice Wednesday. He limited in practice today. Heavily taped ankle. Looks limited in his mobility. He's got three nights of rest. 2 full days of rest before that 1 o'clock kickoff in Pittsburgh's home opener. Who you squadding up with here? If Jordan Love plays, assume both are playing.
Assuming they're playing, I think I would take Love. Mostly because, are we saying what is the root of this? Is it from a health standpoint or a strictly fantasy standpoint?
Fantasy.
I'm saying Love. Then, yeah. I mean, I don't trust Herbert much in a Harbaugh offense with no receivers. I mean, who, you know, what's his receiving core? So
right. So
Jordan Love here. I think Jordan Love, even if he's braced up and not super mobile, especially against Tennessee compared to in Pittsburgh, I think Jordan Love still will be able to put up some passing numbers.
I agree. I don't think he would completely fall off a cliff, but he certainly would be lacking mobility as well. And then I'll flip it on you here. Which one would you buy low on if you were to get, like, just say a low ball trade on either guy and you kind of need a quarterback here?
Love. A knock against Herbert. Just, you know, you're in a Harbaugh offense with no receivers. The story writes itself.
We'll just do this one next. Joshua Palmer here's banged up. So Joshua Palmer versus Keenan Allen. I believe Keenan Allen was limited today.
Yeah, and he was out last week as well, this one's tough. I might do a dual sit on here. So I think if I have to pick one, if I had to play one, I would say probably Keenan Allen, just because, you know, he's the much better option if they are both like in a good situation and healthy. Keenan Allen's the far superior option, so Keenan Allen. But, you know, Caleb has been shaky, and, you know, none of the receivers are getting targets and catches, really. So
They're both doubtful.
Sit them both down.
Sit them both down. But I guess if I were to say which one might play more than the other, I think Palmer has a better chance to play. But let's go to Blue Cheese or Ranch for dipping your wings.
This is tough. This is tough
because I hate blue cheese.
I don't mind. See, I don't hate blue cheese. But I'm still going ranch. I'm squadding up with the ranch, and sitting down the blue cheese. But I don't dislike blue cheese.
Yeah,
in the right setting, blue cheese is a starter.
Okay, so let's go to wide receiver here, Malik Nabers, great talent, shitty offense, or Jameson Williams, wide receiver 2 on what's supposed to be an electric offense. Who you squadding up with?
Been a great start for Nabers. I love seeing the Williams kind of redemption arc. Good for J-Mo making some plays out there. But Nabers, wide receiver 1, and has been putting up, you know, the numbers, getting lots of targets and catches. Whereas Jameson,
Giants on the road at the Browns.
So many other options.
Lions on the road.
Jameson is much more, you know, boom or bust, whereas Malik Nabers is going to be boom,
high floor.
Boom versus a high floor, correct. Yeah, his bad week is still going to be at least a lot of targets.
Yeah, that was kind of a softball one I would play. Although I do think the Browns defense might shut him down and force them to throw it to somebody else. I think the Browns are smart enough defense defensively coached team to say, we're taking Malik away from you. We dare you to throw it to him. Whereas Jameson Williams, I think, is going to gain more open looks against the Cardinals defense, which is playing well. But then we got this one was I had from last week. We were supposed to use Justice Hill or Trey Benson. And this is obviously a which one would you keep on your bench right now? Or maybe take a flyer on in DFS.
The answer is Trey Benson by a mile. Because if Derrick Henry goes down, there's no guarantee that Justice Hill's even getting the majority of the touches after that.
Oh, I disagree. I think he's RB1. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
I disagree with that. But, you know, James Conner, love the guy. One of my favorite players in the entire league. I think he's just incredibly underrated. But he's, you know, the dude cannot play 17 games, went through chemo. That body is just not durable. And so I have every league that I have Connor in, which I think is only two, I have Trey Benson stashed because, you know, it's just a matter of time.
Wow, Garrett Wilson, incredible touchdown. Yeah,
that was nice.
Last one, Xbox or PlayStation?
I'm an Xbox guy.
But for no real reason.
It's just because I played Halo.
Yeah.
And continued to use an Xbox.
I guess I should say the newest, the Xbox X or PS5 would be more.
What a throw.
Long term, I would go Xbox as well.
I don't really have a dog in the fight.
I would just say PS5.
At least
I think they have a better. Although Game Pass, I guess the actual question is Game Pass or PS Plus libraries, but we don't have time to play video games anymore. We're like, fucking old and just do chores.
I feel like PlayStation, Sony's more likely to.
They have better single player games.
Have a South Park episode about them taking over the world. Chin Pokemon. So sit down, Sony. But no, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. All right, let's go to draw of the week. That was a good way to do the injuries and stuff. I think we'll stick with that. And okay, draw of the week. Also, I'm noticing in the soccer world here, Uventes is still plus 270 to win Serie A. I don't hate that. Inter's the favorite, minus 140. But my draws in Serie A is why I'm saying that. I'm going a deep cut here. This must have been a newly promoted team, AC Monza. Sounds like a good cheese.
They were recently promoted, but not brand new. They were in Serie A last year, at least. I know that. I think they were promoted up last year, so it's probably their second year. But yeah, bottom tier team.
They're playing home against Bologna. So give me the plus 210 draw there. Both teams are also underdogs for the money line.
I'm going bottom tier Premier League teams, both recently promoted to the Premier League. Southampton and Ipswich. Ipswich rocking that Ed Sheeran wave. Really just a Cinderella story. They're a rapid ascent, back-to-back promotions, I believe. But I like them to get a draw here. Probably both will all be immediately relegated back down, but damn it, Ipswich, fun to watch.
Is Wexford ever going to make the EPL?
Wrexham? Probably. Yeah. They'll make, I think they will make it at least to the championship, but it's the EFL championship, which is the second tier English football soccer league for our non-soccer listeners, is honestly one of the funnest leagues to watch because it's like there's 24 teams top to bottom. It is like very there's a lot of parity, like all the teams are fairly evenly matched, so these battles for promotion and or to avoid relegation are pretty they get pretty intense. So I think Wrexham, they're in League One now, right? They're the third tier. So yeah. I think they're towards the top of that table. So I think they'll probably get promoted to the championship, but I can see them kind of being stuck in the championship for a little bit. Damn it, dude. They're fucking putting Drake May in. I'm in a fucking keeper league and I drafted him with the last pick just in case he freaking popped off. I had the opportunity to, you can't keep someone you picked up on waivers. I had the opportunity to do that with Stroud last year, and I took fucking Kenny Pickett because of how he looked in the preseason. And Brissett isn't. Why are they showing Drake May then? Brissett's still in the game. And
they just wanted to talk about him.
Okay. Well, then that, I was going to say, I literally today dropped Drake May because I was like, he's not even playing. I'm not stashing him on my roster if he's still going to be an undrafted guy next year. I was just hoping he was going to pop off.
Yeah, I took Drake May's under passing yards. It was like 2,400 or something.
Hammer that for sure.
That was earlier in the summer. I did parlay that with other stupid shit on Underdog though, so it's still that parlay is still probably gonna lose.
I do like Drake May though, and I like how they're not rushing him out there, which I think is smart. But to your credit, Jaden Daniels has not looked bad. Has not looked good necessarily either, but he's not looked bad. He's showing some flashes there. So definitely looks better than Caleb right now.
So yeah, we're on track to win offensive rookie of the year, and we're on track to really do some damage here late in the if he can stay healthy, do some damage late in the fantasy season.
That Giants game, the Giants Commanders game was the Giants are the first team to score three touchdowns and not give up a single touchdown and lose.
Yeah,
it's incredible. The most Giants stat you'll ever hear.
Yeah, it's quite incredible.
But yeah, my team banged up and I had to make some moves, so I got rid of Drake May because he was just wasting a roster spot. And so if he comes in and throws like four touchdowns, I will just cry.
Yeah, that'd be tough. Well, my dynasty league, I dropped Dante Foreman when they like cut him and brought him back to the practice squad. I dropped him, and then I dropped Cam Akers as well, week one, because it looked like they were just going to keep him around. And then Damian Pierce got hurt, so I lost both of those, and then I got outbid for both of them on the fucking waivers this week. And that hurt. That hurt a lot. But I had Carson Steele stashed in my rookie-only taxi league or taxi spot. So I had him back in July. I had Carson Steele back in July. I had no clue. I just picked. I was like, a Chiefs player. Let's get the Chiefs guy running back in there because they basically are only on Pacheco. That was a great turnaround. For that,
it is an interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because I can do a little 30-second blurb here. I like Pirine just for his. I think Pirine will get the targets for your fantasy value wise. I think Carson Steele gets the bulk of the carries. But also stash Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's out for two more games. He's on the non-football injury list. I think he can't come back until he had to miss four games, as far as I know.
But depression.
Did you hear the thing? Like, he has like PTSD from he got like robbed at gunpoint and someone got shot and killed or something. I'm like, oh damn, yeah. So I'm like, okay.
Oh,
I'm like, yeah, take your time, kid. That happened while he was at LSU, I guess. So, I mean, I think if he does come back, I mean, if you have, you know, if your team is healthy and you have a roster spot to spare, pick him up because I think he might. You know, there's at least a chance he becomes his rookie version again, at least by getting a bulk of the touches.
Yeah, I don't hate that at all. All right, well, let's do the greasy gambling picks. I'm actually not ready quite all the way, so
I'll lead off bat here. So yeah. So I'm looking for, I'm four and two, so I'm doing all right. I'm faring better than Steve. I just can't hit my lock. And I'll tell you what, based on this game, this college game tonight, I'm terrified right now of the picks I've made, but we're gonna keep rolling with it. So hear my rationale at least. I got Clemson minus 18. I think they, you know, I obviously got embarrassed by Florida. Not Florida, what the fuck am I saying? By Georgia. And then Georgia struggled with Kentucky, so that makes it look even worse. But I think that's more of just a fluke. I think Georgia would probably embarrass most teams in the country. And then Clemson just absolutely lit up App State the next week, which was supposed to be a very good, not a very good, but it was supposed to be a good App State team and kind of really solved their offensive woes. Even last couple of years when they were, you know, beating teams, they weren't like scoring 60 plus like that. So I think their offense is going to be better this year than people are, better than it was the last couple of years at least, than people are anticipating. And then NC State also been one of the most underwhelming teams of the season. They started out ranked, not in Danny's poll because I just know better, but in the regular poll they were ranked and have struggled mightily, including getting just absolutely routed by Tennessee. And then Grayson McCall, quarterback, is out with an undisclosed injury. So you got a true freshman, four-star freshman, but a true freshman nonetheless, making his first start at Death Valley. So I like Clemson to win big. But now App State tonight just getting routed by South Alabama. So maybe App State's just terrible. Who knows? Maybe Clemson does suck. But I took Clemson with the points, and I took the – I like the over. It's at 44. But yeah, I think Clemson, at least based off their last game, will be able to score points. So there's two of my picks, probably 0-2 right there. Then my lock, I'm going Maryland, 17.5 at home against Villanova. I don't know why that spread is so – Villanova is very good.
Do you want to know the betting on that, the market on that?
Fuck, that's going to scare me. What?
Yeah,
what
it's going it? It's bad.
90 all money's on Maryland?
All 96% of the money is on Maryland.
Lock it in, boys.
90% of the bets. Everybody is betting Maryland.
That's crazy.
Every single person betting.
But still, I mean, it's not like it's North Dakota State. Like Villanova's, they're top 10, maybe in the top 5 in FCS, but Maryland should not. It's not a game that they should struggle with. That's baffling to me. Lock it in though. Let's lose some money this week, boys.
All right. I'm just gonna stick with my system here, and maybe it'll pay off for me one day. Like, there's no way it can just keep going in this direction, right? 0-6. Here we go. I'm gonna give you maybe the juiciest one. Here, Michigan plus 5 at home against USC. They made the quarterback change. This is the toughest defense USC is going to be playing thus far this year. So as good as they looked, it's a little different. I think the quarterback change is really my biggest thing. Plus, it's just like the Maryland game. Everybody is betting USC. 82% of the bets, 92% of the money. The books need Michigan to cover. They can lose and cover. So I think it's a 4-point game here. Maybe the backdoor cover from Michigan late. USC should be, you know, minus. I guess they're no Texas, but they're still kind of that caliber and Big Ten game here. It's going against the public and it's going against what makes sense. Michigan plus 5. And then I'm going to go the Baltimore Ravens minus 1 at Dallas. Dallas is banged up on the offensive line. Baltimore can prove they stop the run. CeeDee Lamb is... what was he? Did he practice today? CD Lamb says ankle is cool. All right, his ankle's cool. He's fine. I still think they're going to force Dak to throw the ball, which you can throw the ball on the Ravens. That does scare me a bit, but like then and but it's the Ravens are 0-2. I think it's a must win almost for Baltimore. If you start the season 0-3, I mean the Bengals did it. That the Ravens do have the makeup to get back from 0-3 and get back into the playoffs in time. But I think it's the hungrier dog here. Ravens are the hungrier dog, even though they're a favorite on the road. And again, it's another one that kind of makes no sense. I think the Cowboys should be favorited here at home, right? So give me Baltimore. 70% of the money is on Baltimore. And then, I'm down to my lock of the week, and I kind of hate them all. You know what? I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, -6.5 at home against the Denver Broncos. It's not sharp. It's actually kind of the opposite. 83% of the public is betting on the Buccaneers. But I think the Denver Broncos have a pretty good defense. They should limit the Buccaneers to 21, 24 points. I just don't see how the Denver Broncos are scoring points. I think the Buccaneers are getting one of their safety back or something. One of their DBs they're getting back this week, which they were missing last week against the Lions, and they still did fine. Controlling the Lions. This is nothing compared to what they just had to play against the Lions offensively. So I think they keep that energy rolling, and the defense comes through for the Bucs here. -6.5 is my lock.
Don't hate it. Bo Nix has certainly not looked good, which makes the whole Russell Wilson situation even funnier. I love the Michigan pick. Man, Roger just got lit up. LSU has struggled against Nicholls State and freaking should have lost to that South Carolina game. So USC might not be as real maybe as we thought week one. Same as I said with Georgia, I think Texas would probably embarrass most schools as well. So I think people are acting like Michigan's total poverty. Obviously, they're going to take a big step back from last year just with everything they lost and all the scrutiny and stuff. But yeah, Michigan at home with, you know, everybody riding USC hard. I think Michigan's in for a big day.
Yeah, I think it's the classic. Everyone saw them on national television get dogged by Texas at home, and they're like, well, if they lost their home field advantage and then this team isn't what it was, then USC should have a comfortable win here. But yeah, it's big. Welcome to Big Ten football.
I wish this was like a November game, because I want these West Coast teams to feel the wrath. Feel the wrath of the Big Ten grounded pound. I do love, yo. So Indiana might be a team to watch. Give me a 30-second friggin' Indiana rant here. So they got Kirk Cignetti, the coach from James Madison, who did like crazy things, pull in Curtis Rourke, Ohio Bobcats quarterback, in the transfer portal, who was actually a damn good quarterback. But they look freaking, Indiana looks legit. So they haven't played anybody. UCLA is awful, but they just went to UCLA and smacked the fuck out of them in the Rose Bowl. Indiana's 3-0. Their schedule, this is, they got Charlotte at home this week, Maryland at home at Northwestern, then they have Nebraska at home. If they can win that Nebraska game, they then have Washington and Sparty, who are both down. Like we might be genuinely talking about a 8-1, 9-0 Indiana going into November, which is like fucking crazy to think about. Then they got Michigan, Ohio State right there, but this might be a pretty decent Indiana team.
Yeah. I agree. They're James Madison plus from the portal. Good for them. And yeah, and they took a big step, a big leap forward. So yeah, that's our show. We kept it barely under an hour. But I think it was, we had a little extra to talk about there with preseason plus concussion talk, which is kind of our specialty area of knowledge. So we will see you next week for more red hot discussions and picks. Let us know at Return to Play Pod on X if you want to hear us do any squat up or sit down takes, and give us your feedback, argue with us. We want to argue football. And
one more thing before you sign off. Say Arch Manning like looks fucking
crazy
legit. Yeah, okay. So say he pops off for a couple weeks. What do they do? Do they stick with him?
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say Quinn Ewers might be a top two quarterback in the nation and a top two quarterback on his own team. Like, I don't know. Arch looked crazy good. He's the real deal.
Who are they playing though?
Louisiana Monroe. So I mean, they're gonna win by 60. But like, I don't know how long. You know, oblique strain is tough to kind of give a prognosis on because it's not like, you know, it's not like brace it up and play through it. Like, you know, when your core is jacked, like everything hurts. You know what I mean? Like you can't do anything. So, who knows how long Quinn Ewers is going to be out? Could be just this game, and it could be, you know, a month or longer. So, I'm excited though. It's the Arch Manning tour.
Yeah, I think this is his show. If he gets another two legit wins here in a row, which you're looking at a month here to maybe get back from that oblique, but we'll keep an eye out on that. But that's definitely the take right now. I would put in if they have Arch Manning, like if they still have the quarterback award for him, he would have to basically go undefeated, I think, to win the Heisman.
Oh yeah, I saw it. He had already jumped to like ninth or something in the Heisman odds.
Yeah, that's sucker money.
Oh yeah.
I still like the dart from Ole Miss. He still got good odds, and
my Cam Ward pick looking pretty good though.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, all right. Enjoy the weekend. I'm going to Greek Fest to get a gyro and some baklava. Dolomades. I love Greek food.
Dude, is it a Greek week or something? Because the Greek church in Akron has their Greek fest literally right now. We just had that for dinner.
Oh, yeah, ours is this weekend.
Grape here. Leaves are freaking, because that's Dolomades or whatever. That's
the grape. The grape leaves with the rice.
I don't know what they are. I love them things, dude. Oh, I could have three meals a day if I could. I don't know really what I'm eating. But damn it, it's good.
It's the leaves that are on the grapevine, and they take those leaves, pick them, wash them.
Olive oil, or what's the? It's just like
it's a seasoned, seasoned rice and meat. Sometimes meat is in there too.
What's the oil? Because they're like oily.
But yeah, probably olive oil.
I feel like Greek people put meat in it also versus other Mediterranean peoples.
Yeah, sometimes they come
restaurant. They don't put meat in them. I mean, they're still good. They put more of that like cheese shit on top. But
yeah.
I'm crazy for some grape leaves, man.
Yeah, wife hates them. So
I can order them for me, and I'll eat hers.
I know. Yeah, if I order them, I get them all. So that's what that's a yeah. All right. Well, if you're eating Greek, Mexican, Chinese. Cheeseburger, whatever you're enjoying this weekend with your football. Stay healthy, America.